down. You are good. Fundamentally, in the bones of your bones, you are holy and beautiful and powerful and good. Your truest, your deepest self. I love that it's Pride. Such a good day, such a good stretch of days when we celebrate the goodness, the wholeness, the holiness, the rightness, and the beauty of our lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer folks. This precious time when we celebrate this first and most foundational piece of who we are together as Unitarian Universalists, one of our seven principles, the classic inherent worth and dignity of every person. This is, of course, a big deal, because it's hard for so many of us to feel. For so many reasons, in so many ways, we have internalized voices of shame and ridicule, voices of demeaning, of belittling. The church, not long ago, and some churches even now, teach this doctrine of original sin, that you were born sinful, that you were born depraved and far from God, that you are dirty and sullied. This goes back to two Christian theologians, especially St. Augustine, around about 1,500 years ago, and Luther, around about 500 years ago. Reverend Carl Gregg writes, "Both Augustine and Luther were at times obsessed with the theme of sin and grace, and these fixations affected how they interpreted the Bible and in turn how many Christians have read the Bible since. The point is that although we humans are certainly flawed, finite creatures, the dominance of this original sin motif," he says, "in Western Christian theology is neither inevitable or integral." I remember, now it was decades ago, I had arrived with my father and my stepmother at her little run-down, perfect beach bungalow near Sag Harbor in New York. It was this tiny shack set apart from the street, surrounded by much fancier houses. And I had arrived for a few days with that perfect summer circumstance of very little to do, people I loved very much, in a brand new book. I remember sitting back in the sun in the yard and opening the book Original Blessing by Matthew Fox. I commend the book to you. I devoured it there in those days. And the beautiful thing, the amazing thing about that book and about this thing that we are building here at South Church and in so many places is that it topples this idea of original sin, and it says, no, you are not depraved. You are not sullied by this humanity. You are not distant or fallen, but rather you are good. You are holy and beautiful and true, and more, you are surrounded by beauty, by miracle, and by goodness. From our bodies and our beings, from our connections and our creativities, we are part of this vast blessing, over and over again expressing itself. And if you pay attention, you can feel it and know it. As many of you know, Lauren and I just got back from sabbatical, and it was wonderful. One of the things early on that I decided to dive into during my time was to read more and to learn more about the Transcendentalists. This is a group of folks, including Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, Margaret Fuller, and others. Emerson, in his essay, The Transcendentalists, writes, "The Transcendentalists adopts the whole conversion of spiritual doctrine. He believes in miracle, in the perpetual openness of the human mind to the new influx of light and power. He believes in inspiration and in ecstasy." I loved reading their words, feeling their call to openness and rapture, Margaret Fuller writes, "It seemed I could never return to a world in which I had no place." They called for a new kind of religious experience, a new kind of living. They called for people to wake up from the slumber of disconnection, from the illusion of their separateness. My favorite named transcendentalist, Orestes Brownson, wonderful name, fallen in name popularity in recent years. But Orestes writes, "The time has come for a new church, for a synthesis of the elements of the life of humanity. The end to be attained is union. For us, union with one another, union with this world, with this blessing and beautiful world surrounding us." By far, my favorite piece of transcendentalist wisdom, however, was this. In his essay, the American scholar Emerson writes, "When he can read God directly, the hour is too precious to be wasted in other men's transcripts of their readings." This stopped me cold and made me laugh out loud. As I read these words, I was on one of my trips, a trip to Asheville, North Carolina. I had met with the minister of the church there and learned about their system and their moment. I was in a cabin in the mountains with a stream right in front of me, with this famous mist and fog of the Smoky Mountains thick around me. It was beautiful. And here was this teacher reaching out back from time and saying, "If you need to read these words and hear us talk to you about the miracle of existence, about the beauty of this world and this life, if you need to read these words, that's okay. But you should probably just close the book and go outside and drink in this same truth for yourself. Step outside into this sublime night. Take it in. Take it all in." So I did. I closed the book and I walked out into the cool night. And I listened. And I opened. And the phone rang. And it was my family, my sweet, faraway family, and we FaceTimed. Some of you know I grew a rather large beard during the sabbatical. Towards the end, we began calling it the Sabbeardical. And as I held the phone, you know, that tiny little picture was filled halfway with beard. But more importantly, in the larger picture, there they were. My sweet beloved, my beautiful children, our puppy, our home, our life, all of the best things in my life, all of the hardest things in my life. And seeing them, I knew this is the path. This is the sublime and connected path. This is the truth to waken up to. This original blessing, these lives just as they are. These selves just as they are, these deepest and truest selves. And our task over and over is to listen when this kind of wisdom speaks. Jeffrey Marsh tells this story. He says, "My first Pride event was taking my mom to church. I was in high school at the time, and there was one LGBTQ church in the area, and it happened to be in the county where I grew up. And my mom was studying to be a Lutheran pastor. I had come out to her a couple of months prior to that. And she went through this very typical but also personally brave transition where she started grieving for the kids she thought she had and started slowly celebrating the kids she actually got. So part of that was I said, 'Hey, Mom, you're into church and Jesus. And there's this church over here that loves gay people and queer people.' And it was summer, and we went to their Pride Sunday. And it was life-changing." He says, "Personally, for the first time in my life, being in a room with people like me, to be completely honest," he says, "it was everything at once. It was exhilarating, and it was confusing, and it was scary, and it was fun. It was a homecoming, but a really messy homecoming. At the time when I was 18, I was rebellious like so many of us are then. And I thought, I'm just going to blow the door off the closet, have the pendulum swing all the way out, be in your face as possible with my queerness. And he says, in this little country church, I could see people living as they were. But they weren't marching around the sanctuary banging pots and pans about how queer they were. They were just people, and they were worshiping, being spiritual, and being themselves. He says that after that simple moment with these folks, he could see his future for the first time. With his mom on the way home, they spoke of his life, of what his life could be for the first time. There is the truest you. And this is what the world longs for. The truest you deep down, underneath all the messages of worthlessness and fear, underneath all the messages of insufficiency and inadequacy. And this is our work, to open to this influx of new light and power, to know our place, to know that we are blessed from the get-go, to know that we are holy and needed, that there is some precious piece of this work that is only ours to bring to birth into being, to know that this consequence that birthed you, these twists and turns, these lives, which have brought us here to this room and to this morning and to this hour, that this is the sublime, that this is the holy, that this is truth right here and right now, and it is ours to open to see and to feel and to savor and to give thanks. This is from Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude by Ross Gay. He writes, "Hear ye, hear ye. I am here to holler that I have hauled tons, by which I don't mean lots, I mean tons of manure. And I've stood ankle deep in swales of maggots, swirling their spent beer grains the brewery man was good enough to dump off, holding his nose, for they smell very bad. Though they make the compost writhe giddy and lick its lips, twirling dung with my pitchfork again and again with hundreds and hundreds of other people, we dreamt an orchard that way. Furrowing our brows and hauling our wheelbarrows, sweating through our shirts, and 2 years later, there was a party at which trees were sunk into the well-fed earth, one of which, a Liberty apple, after being watered, was tamped by a baby barefoot, with a bow hanging in her hair, biting her lip in her joyous work. And friends, this is the realest place I know. So thank you. Thank you, Zinnia and Gooseberry, Coxcomb and Scarlet Runner. Thank you, Feverfew and Lemon Balm. Thank you, Knitbone and Sweetgrass and Sunchoke and False Indigo and Moonglow and Catkin and Crookneck and Painted Tongue and Seed Bop and Johnny Jump Up. Thank you, what rackets us glad, what glad rackets us. And thank you, too, this knucklehead heart, this pelican heart, this gap-tooth heart flinging open its gaudy maw to the sky, oh clumsy, oh bumbled, oh giddy, oh dumbstruck. Soon it will be over. Which is precisely what the child in my dream said, holding my hand, pointing at the roiling sea and sky, hurling like so many buffalo, who said, it's much worse than we think, and sooner. To whom I said, no duh, child in my dreams. What do you think this singing is? What is this shuddering, this screaming and reaching and dancing and crying other than loving what every second goes away? Goodbye, I mean to say. And thank you every day. And so, South Church, thank you. Thank you for this realist place. Thank you for this orchard we are building, for all this manure, all these hardest things, all these things we bring, which we pour into the earth so that for our children's tiny feet damping down the soil years later, work we started years ago. Thank you for these cycles of leadership and loving, for each and every one of you, for the truest and the deepest you, for the parts of yourselves still unfinished and unfurling. Thank you for the fledgling parts, for your stretching and your striving, for your questing and your questioning, for your reaching and your dancing and your crying. Thank you for coming back to the table again and again, for doing the hard work before you. Thank you for this room, for this morning, for all that has brought us here, and for these good years stretched out before us. With potential, with power, and with purpose. Thank you.